This tape is for the benefit of those who may not be acquainted with the earlier background of UFO research, or so-called flying saucers. This lecture on the introduction to flying saucers will be presented by Dr. A.G. Dittmar of New York. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Dittmar.
This talk is intended to be an introduction to the study of flying saucers. There are many who might be interested in this subject, but have not had the information at their fingertips. And so we will try to give you a background so that you might enjoy future tapes on this subject. It all happened back in 1947 when Kenneth Arnold, a private pilot, was flying in the state of Washington. All at once, in the vicinity of Mount Rainier, he saw a string of very odd-shaped objects doing odd maneuvers in and about the mountain peaks. They were about 25 miles away, and he watched them closely. Upon landing, he was interviewed by the press, and the reporter asked him, "What did they look like?" And he said, "They looked like saucers." And at that point, the word flying saucer was coined by that pressman. The name has stuck. It probably is sort of an unfortunate name because it really doesn't describe the things that we see in the skies. Some of them do look like saucers, but some of them do not. From that time on, there was a steady influx of reports of strange objects seen in the sky. They were not confined to the western part of the United States or the United States itself, but they came from all over the world by the thousands. There was a lot of comment and speculation throughout the world. The press carried many articles on these sightings, and it became quite a mystery, and people were wondering what they were, where they came from, why they were here. Some thought they were secret weapons of the United States. Some thought they came from other countries. But no one seemed to be able to say exactly what they were. Major Donald Keyhoe, retired major of the Marines, decided that he would really investigate the matter to the fullest extent. Now, many of these sightings were made by pilots of the Air Force. He was able to obtain 41 of these reports from the Air Force. They were released by the Air Force, and he used these reports as a basis for one of his books. He has written three books, the first of which was Flying Saucers Are Real. His second book, Flying Saucers from Outer Space, is where we find these 41 documented sightings from the Air Force. All at once, during his investigation, a censorship closed in. No more reports were being released by the Air Force. A great secrecy veiled the whole subject. It wasn't long before people began to want to know more. And with this sudden censorship, they decided to do a lot of investigation for themselves. And so private investigation groups started to spring up all around the country and in other parts of the world too, and the sightings were still reported by civilians. At the same time, the Air Force kept close track of those that were reported by the pilots of the Air Force. The censorship became so great that Frank Edwards, a noted commentator, who spent a great deal of time commenting on the sighting of flying saucers, was released from his position as commentator, and he was no longer able to report to the people about flying saucers. And the flying saucers are able to maneuver in very, very strange ways, ways in which ordinary aircraft are unable to maneuver. For example, they are able to hover, stand in one place, for any length of time. Then they're able to accelerate at terrific speeds, right from a standstill to an immediate a speed of thousands of miles an hour, and they've been tracked on radar. Been seen to go 5, 6, 7, 10,000 miles an hour and more, speeds which certainly are not even vaguely approached by all known aircraft. Not only are they able to accelerate at these speeds, but they're able to come to an immediate standstill. They're able to change their direction instantaneously, shoot off at a right angle, up, down, left or right. They do look like saucers in some instances. Some of them are cigar-shaped. Those are the two main shapes of these unidentified flying objects, UFOs, unidentified flying objects. That is a word that has been coined, or a group of words, to describe these things we see in the sky. It seems to be better than the term flying saucer. Now, speculation has been made of how anyone could possibly survive these terrific accelerations and deaccelerations and change of direction. In one book I have here, Space, Gravity, and the Flying Saucer by Leonard Cramp, tells us about the theory of anti-gravitational propulsion. These ships, he thinks, set up their own gravity. Everything in that ship, occupants, machinery, all things that are in the ship are subject only to the gravitational field that the ship is able to produce. It is not affected at all by the gravity of the planet which it is near. They do fly around silently. In most cases, no sound is heard at all during these sightings of the UFOs. But where do they come from? Some people have said they must be secret weapons of the United States. Well, many of these things have been sighted right in the commercial air lanes. They've been seen by the pilots of these commercial airliners, and they've been seen by the passengers. Now, the United States certainly would not be testing its aircraft, its flying saucer, in the commercial air lanes, jeopardizing the safety of the people who are riding. So that eliminates the U.S. Well, are they coming from a foreign power? Russia, for example. Of all the flying saucer investigation groups believe that this is not the case, because these things have been seen in every country of the world. And certainly a foreign power would not risk a secret device over all areas for the fear that one of these might crash and then the secret would be lost. So we certainly can eliminate foreign powers. That leaves very little on this earth. They must be coming, as Donald Kehoe intimates in his second book, Flying Saucers from Outer Space, that they must be coming from other places. Where could that be? Well, it must be from other planets. Well, this gives us a lot of food for thought. I'm not speaking to you as an authority on flying saucers, because I am not. What I am doing is trying to review what I have been able to read and learn over this period of study and bring you more or less up to date on it, so that you will be able to enjoy future tapes and some of the literature on the subject. It isn't inconceivable that there can be life on other planets in our own solar system. And why would it be inconceivable with the millions of possibilities of other solar systems in this universe that there might not be many other planets with life upon them? If we can suppose that, then it also must be supposed that of the millions of other planets which are inhabited, that we would not be the most advanced civilization. We, at best, could only expect to be about average. That would mean that there are many civilizations farther advanced than we are. And these civilizations could then have been able to have conquered space and are able to perform interplanetary flights. That sounds quite logical to me and also to these people who are really studying the flying saucer problem. Just look at ourselves. We have advanced terrifically in the past 50 years. 50 years ago, some of the things that we see today couldn't be even dreamt of. But we have them today. What will another 50, 100, 200, 300 years be? Right now, we are attempting to conquer interplanetary flight. We're working with rockets. Rockets seem to be a dead end because of the terrific amount of fuel that has to be carried and used. But at least we're trying. We're going to send up a satellite, then with the idea of reaching the moon, and then on beyond to the other planets. Well, we're thinking of those things. Certainly life on other planets are thinking of the same thing. So most flying saucer investigation societies and groups believe that they are coming from outer space. The question then always comes up, why have they not landed? Well, there are reports that flying saucers have landed. We have books about that. We have the story of Truman Bertram, who tells about 11 personal contacts that he made with people from a flying saucer. Then we have Daniel Fry, an engineer out there at White Sands. He saw a flying saucer on the desert, and as he investigated it, he heard a voice suggest that he might get in and take a trip. It also said that there was no one aboard, but that he was talking to him by radio, that this was a remotely controlled ship, and that the mothership was about 600 miles above him. Well, Daniel Fry tells us that he did go aboard and he flew from White Sands to New York and back in 20 minutes. Well, by this time, you are really being shocked. I know this information shocked me the first time I heard it, but I've been giving it careful thought for a long time now. And as you do that, using this material as food for thought, you too will see that these things could be possible, and probably are. Cedric Allingham tells about a personal contact he made over there in Scotland. There are many others that have reported personal sightings, and personal contacts, I should say. All of these personal contacts have been made in remote places. And as we talk to people about them, the question always comes up, well, why did they just present themselves to one person at a time, or small group of persons? Well, let's reverse the situation. What would we do if we were able to conquer space and reach a nearby planet? What would we do first? The first thing we would do, we would get the lay of the land. We would try to map it out, learn the geography, find out where things were. Then we probably would like to learn something about the people. We wouldn't land in in the outskirts or in the center of a large city where a big group would immediately gather, probably take us into custody, put us in jail, steal our ship, tear it apart, find out what makes it click. That would be a risk, and we wouldn't do it. Wouldn't that happen if a flying saucer landed, say, in Central Park, New York City? There would be a terrific gathering. The police would be there, the FBI. They'd be whisked off for questioning, and the government would check over the ship, probably take it apart, find out what made it go. So that seems to be the reason why there have been no mass landings and mass contacts as yet. That may come when they find that the people are ready for it. In the instances where there have been personal contacts made, such as George Adamski's, he tells us that the people have sent messages through him to be sent back to the people to prepare the earth for these mass contacts and mass landings. They tell him that they will not harm us, that they are friendly, that they have long since given up the idea of war. They have gone way behind and beyond that. They only dimly recollect times when there were wars on their planets. People there are living in perfect harmony. It is only the Earth that has still not progressed beyond the stage where it does wage wars. George Williamson, who was present at one of Adamski's contacts, his first one, tells in a book how he and a group have made contacts by radio with a spacecraft. At the end of this talk, I am going to summarize all of the literature so that you will be able to have it all in one place and be able to look into it as you see fit. We have a new book now. It was published in December 1955 by Donald Keyhole. It is called The Flying Saucer Conspiracy. This is one of the best books. Probably it is not the one you should start reading first, but it is one of the best books on the subject. He carries right through with having proof of everything that he states. He tells us of orders to the Air Force personnel to keep everything secret, not to pass out any information on their sightings. He also thinks he knows why all of this has been kept secret, and he tells about it in his book. We're not alone in this flying saucer investigation. I've noticed that there are three distinct groups in regard to flying saucers. The first group is that which says, well, there can't be anything to us, just science fiction, forget it. Well, I was once that way, until I heard a few more things. I picked up a little interest. Then there's the second group, the group that says there can be something there, why not? I don't know anything about it, but I would like to hear about it. Well, many of the listeners to this tape will be in that category. And then after they have studied this for a considerable length of time, read the books, listened to tapes, listened to interviews, they come to this third feeling about flying saucers, that they know that they are real and that they are coming from outer space. I have been quite surprised at the type of person who has been interested in this. We find many people with good educations, good educational backgrounds, who believe that there are flying saucers and that they are coming from outer space. Among them are clergymen, scientists, astronomers, teachers, principals, professional men. And so, I hope that this is going to provide food for thought so that you will not pass it over as, well, nothing but science fiction, all hoaxes. Inside the Spaceships is George Adamski's second book. It probably is the extreme in the flying saucer field. He tells us in this book about having made personal contacts, how he has been aboard the ships, and how he has actually taken flights in them. A moment or two ago, I told you there were two main classifications of flying saucers. The first is the saucer-shaped one, the scout ship, and the second is the cigar-shaped mothership. The cigar-shaped mothership is the interplanetary ship, the one that actually does the flying, such as our, comparing it with our aircraft carrier. The scout ships are small ships that are carried aboard the mothership, and as the mothership nears a planet, it sends out these scout ships. And these are the scout ships that we see as flying saucers and which reports have been made as having landed. These motherships may be 2,000 or 3,000 feet long. The scout ships range probably from 30 feet to 100 feet in diameter, according to the reports. In Mr. Adamski's book, Inside the Spaceships, he has diagrams of the scout ships from the various planets, Venus, Mars, and Saturn, and also of the motherships. Another interesting book, which more or less tries to hold the thing together, it's called Flying Saucers and Common Sense, by Waveney Girvan. This is published in England. Flying Saucers and Common Sense, published by Frederick Muller Limited, London, England. Flying Saucers and Common Sense. I strongly urge you to read that book. Flying Saucers, Flying Saucer from Mars by Cedric Ellingham, is an account of seeing a flying saucer in the sky and it landing and the attempt to converse with the occupant. All of these books have photographs. Inside the Spaceships has many photographs, which George Adamski tells us he has taken with his 6-inch telescope. It's a reflector. George Ellingham had a common camera, and he took pictures, close-up pictures of the saucer, and he has one which he claims to be a Martian, a person. There are other books which are very good. We have one by Jessup, The Case for the UFO, M.K. Jessup. I strongly urge the reading of that one. It also can be obtained in a pocket edition. At this point, let's go through the recommended book list and recommended periodicals. First of all, the Donald E. Keyhoe books. First one, Flying Saucers Are Real, which may be unobtainable at the moment, except in the library because it is out of print. However, Flying Saucers from Outer Space, the second book, contains most of the same material and enlarges upon it. Then we have the Wilkins book, Flying Saucers on the Attack. We have The Coming of the Saucers by Arnold and Palmer. This is the same Kenneth Arnold who made that historic sighting way back there, in the early days. Then Leonard G. Cramp, C-R-A-M-P, Space, Gravity, and the Flying Saucer. M.K. Jessup, J-E-S-S-U-P, The Case for the UFO. Flying Saucers and Common Sense by Waveney Gavan, the English book. And then Leslie and Adamski. Desmond Leslie is a scientist in England. They published the book together. Flying Saucers Have Landed. And Truman Bethrum, B-E-T-H-U-R-U-M, the person who made the 11 personal contacts. His book is Aboard a Flying Saucer. And Daniel W. Fry, F-R-Y, The White Sands Incident. Then The Saucers Speak by Williamson and Bailey, the radio contact. And Adamski's new book, Inside the Spaceships. And Cedric Allingham, A-L-L-I-N-G-H-A-M, Flying Saucer from Mars. And of course, don't forget the new Kehoe book, The Flying Saucer Conspiracy. And now the periodicals. First, CRIFO, C-R-I-F-O, Orbit, O-R-B-I-T, published by Leonard H. Stringfield, 7017 Britton Avenue, Cincinnati, 27, Ohio. And Flying Saucers International's Saucers, Post Office Box 35034, Los Angeles 35, California. And The Proceedings of the College of Universal Wisdom, published by George Van Tassel, Post Office Box 419, Yucca Valley, California. And Saucers, with periods after each letter, Post Office Box 163, Fort Lee, New Jersey. And the Bulletin of the Telonic Research Group, T-E-L-O-N-I-C, Post Office Box 1654, Prescott, Arizona. This is George Williamson's group, published quarterly. And finally, the largest of them all, the Saucerian, S-A-U-C-E-R-I-A-N, published by Gray Barker, Box 2228, Clarksburg, West Virginia. It's suggested that you write to these publications for sample copies or for their subscription rates. This about summarizes the literature. We hope that you will enjoy perusing the pages. And so, until next time, happy sightings.
Of Tape Recorded UFO Information Service, a non-profit organization.